Masechet Baba Kama Daf Saditet. Yesterday we started discussing the opinion of Rav Asi, who thinks that Uman Koneh B'Shevach Kli, meaning if I give a craftsman some raw material, or some wood, and ask him to make a cabinet for me, and then he makes a cabinet, and then he breaks it, he only has to pay him back for the wood, not for the cabinet that he made. The reason is because when a craftsman increases the value, enhances something, then the craftsman takes ownership of the item. And therefore, when I come to pick it up, I'm actually, in a way, buying it from him. It's true, I provided the raw material, so I also have some ownership, as partnership here involved. But once he improves it, he is also an owner, and therefore I'm just coming to buy it from him. So if it gets damaged in the meantime, he's damaging his own thing that he made. So he doesn't have to pay for the damage. He just has to pay for any damage for the raw wood. This is different from if I give him a finished cabinet that has it's a little bit broken, and then in trying to fix it, he breaks it. Then he has to pay for the whole thing because he didn't enhance the value of it. So the craftsman only takes ownership when he enhances the value. We challenged Rav Asi already. We're going to bring a proof and a challenge from another couple of sources right now. Lema misayale hanoten semer lasava. There's a Mishnah coming up on the next daf that says if someone gives wool to a dyer, noten lo samro, and the cauldron where he dyes it was too hot and burnt, instead of dyeing it, he burnt it. So the dyer has to pay for the wool because he ruined the wool, the raw material that the customer gave him. Demes, so now we analyze and we infer. Demes samro in, demes samro vishibho la. The dyer only has to pay for the value of the wool, but does not have to pay for the value of the wool and the enhancement, but just the base amount. Same as with just like the wood, just has to pay the wood, not the value of the cabinet that he made. Now, what are the details of the case? Is it not a case where he only burnt it after the wool fell into it? In other words, he had the cauldron with the dye at the proper temperature. He put the wool in and it got dyed. So it got enhanced. And only then it got burnt and ruined. So we see that and he doesn't have to pay. So we see that, but since he enhanced it first, the dyer acquires it at that point, and therefore he burnt his own thing that he himself owns. That's why he does not have to pay for the enhancement that got ruined, but rather only for the raw wool. So is this not a good proof for Rav Asi? Amar Shmuel hacha maiskinan kegon shekdicho b'shat nefila deleka shebacha. Shmuel says not necessarily a good proof because this Mishnah could be talking about where he burnt it at the time that the wool fell in, so that it never got enhanced. That wool never got dyed in the first place. The dyer took wool, put it in burning hot, too hot wool water, and it just got destroyed. So that's all he did. And that's why he only has to pay for the wool, because there was no enhancement. But what if there was an enhancement, according to Shmuel? Avalikdichol achad nefila mai, noten lo demes samro v'shibho, lema Shmuel let le derav asi. But if he burnt it only after it was properly dyed, then what would you say, Shmuel? That he does have to pay not only the value of the wool, but also the value of the enhancement he has to pay. The dyer would have to pay for the compensation for dyed wool. So does that mean that Shmuel disagrees with Rav Asi? Because Rav Asi seems to be an important opinion. Shmuel would disagree with that. Amar lach Shmuel, hacha maiskinan, kegon desemer sammanim deval habayit, v'saba agar yadeh hu deshekil. Shmuel's backing away. Or he could say, this is all Amar lach Shmuel. We're saying it on behalf of him. We don't want Shmuel to be in disagreement with Rav Asi. So Shmuel could say, oh no, this is not a proof here, because we're talking about a case that has nothing to do with Shevach Kli at all, because the customer provided not only the wool, but also the dye. So he brought that all to the dyer's house. And the dyer, he's only getting paid for his labor, right? How long will it take you, you with your skill, to do this, right? 5 hours. Okay, I'm paying you by the hour for your labor. And that's why, in this case, the dyer only has to pay for ruining the wool, not for the enhancement, because it's not a contract job. Rav Asi would only say in a contract job that the craftsman acquires it, but not if he's just if it's just paying for labor. But if that's the case, that the customer provided the dye also, then the dyer should have to pay for the wool that got ruined and the dye that also got ruined in this boiling hot cauldron. And it doesn't say that. So actually, this okimta that we propose for in the name of Shmuel doesn't work. Rather, we're going to go back to this previous here okimta and say, well, you know, it could have, Shmuel saying it could have happened that it got burnt right away. Not that Shmuel is disagreeing with Rav Asi. In principle, he agrees with Rav Asi. His point is only that there's no proof from this Mishnah. So that's why he's just pushing off the proof. But in fact, he would agree with the principle of Rav Asi that the craftsman acquires ownership if he's a craftsman, and it's his job to take it. He's being paid as a contract for the job. Then he does, in fact, acquire it. And therefore, if he ruins it, only has to pay for the raw materials. Okay, and now a question. Tashema, hanoten talito la'uman, gemaro vehodi'o, afilu mikan v'ad asaramim, eno ober alav mishum lo talin. Netana lo bechasi hayom, kivan sheshaka alav hachama, ober alav mishum bal talin. If I give my garment to a craftsman, I need him to fix it. And the craftsman finished it, right? It's there, it's at the tailor, at the dry cleaner. And he sent a message. Listen, the item is done. Come pick it up whenever you want. So even if I leave it there for 10 days, I don't violate lo talin. The law of lo talin is if I have a day laborer, I have to pay my day laborer, someone I pay by the hour, for whatever work he did that day, I have to pay him that day. I cannot pay him tomorrow. I can't even pay him, at night. I have to pay him before the sun sets on that day. In this case, there's no problem because he still has the item. And so when I go pick up the item, then I'll pay him. So there's no problem of delaying payment if I don't pick it up right away. However, if the tailor, delivers the item in the middle of the day, and now I actually have the item, once the sun sets, and I didn't pay him yet, I do violate Baal Talim. Okay, so there's a distinction between if he still has the item and just told me about it versus if he actually gave me the item. So what can we learn from here? The challenge is from the second case. If you think that the craftsman takes ownership when he enhances the item, then once I gave him this thing, this garment, it was ripped. And now he fixed it. He added something. He hemmed it. He added a border to it, whatever. He enhanced its value in some way. So then if you think that a craftsman acquires something that's enhanced, then why should there be a problem about Talin? I don't owe him money. Rather, he becomes an owner of the item. And I'm coming now. When I pick it up, it's like I'm buying it. And so, if I buy something and I didn't pay for it yet, and I don't pay for it today, I pay for it tomorrow. That's not a problem of Baal Talin. Baal Talin is only a problem of paying wages on time, not if I buy something and I don't pay on time. So here, if you think Oman Kone Beshevach Kli, if I agree with Rav Asi, then there should not be a problem of Baal Talin, not even if I get the item delivered. I just have to pay for something that he owned, he took ownership of, so I have to give him that money. So rather, it seems from here that we treat the craftsman as a laborer, right? And a day laborer does not take ownership of an item. Rav Kana says this case is talking about just laundering of a thick garment. There's no enhancement of the garment. He's not fixing it. He's not making it better. He's not making it look better, adding a border or whatever. Rather, it's just a very thick, stiff garment. So we don't call that enhancement. Well, now we ask, why don't you call that enhancement? Why did I give it to him in the first place if I didn't want him to do something? I gave it to him to soften it. So if he softens it, now that is an enhancement. So why are you not calling that an enhancement? So forget that. Rather, I didn't hire him to soften it. I hired him to tread upon it, and thereby it would soften it. But I didn't hire him for the job, but rather I hired him per treading. Every time you step on it, I will give you 1 cent. Here's a picture of a Roman wall painting of a guy who was actually stepping on clothing in a bowl of water in order to launder it, soften it. So this is the ancient version of a treadmill. Good exercise. Okay, so I'm not paying him for the result. That's the difference. A contract job, I'm paying you only for the result. You have to do it. If it comes out dirty, I don't pay you. Whereas if I'm paying you for the labor, right, I'm paying you by the hour or by the step, then 1 cent per tread. So this is sechirut, and that's why in this case the owner, the craftsman, does not acquire it. And that's why if he gives me the item and I don't pay him on that day, so I'm not paying his wages. So that's the reason here why I would violate Baal Talin. But there is no challenge against Rav Asi's opinion. Now going back to what we thought initially when we asked this question, that it was not a case where I'm hiring him for every tread, but rather I'm hiring for the job of softening it. If we assume that, then this would be a proof for Rav Sheshat. One time Rav Sheshat was asked, "Kablanut over la mishum bar talino eno over." Amar lehu Rav Sheshat over. He was asked, "If you a contractor for a job, and do you have to pay him on time? If you don't pay a contractor on time, do you violate bar talin or not? Is it only for a day laborer or also for a contractor?" And Rav Sheshat says, "You do violate." And so assumption was that we were talking about a contractor, and if the contractor finishes and gives me the item, then I have to pay him on that day. So otherwise it's Baal Talin. So that seems to support Rav Sheshat. Le'emad Rav Sheshat peliga de Rav Aseh. Wait, if so, then that would mean that Rav Sheshat disagrees with Rav Aseh. See, Rav Aseh is very popular. We want everybody to agree with him. And so does Rav Sheshat not think that the craftsman takes ownership because he enhanced it, right? And if he does take ownership, then why should there be a problem about talin? Rav Shmuel says Rav Sheshat wasn't talking about a case where it's a contractor who enhances something. He was talking about a case of a delivery man. If I give someone, a delivery man, a package, here, get this to that place. He's not improving the package. He doesn't even know what's in the package. He's just getting it to that place. And so that's a case where Rav Sheshat was talking about that I have to pay him, even though I'm not paying him by the hour or by the steps. I don't care if he takes a plane or walks there, takes a bike, right? I'm not paying him by the hour. I'm paying him for the job, but this is a job that does not enhance the value of the item. And that's why it has nothing to do with the Shevach Keli. So therefore, it's not relevant. And so he doesn't necessarily disagree with Rav Asi. Lema ketane'e. Let's assume that this question of whether a craftsman acquires a right b'shevach kli or not, the opinion of Rav Asi seems to be the subject of two tana'im, as we see in the following beraita. Asi li sherim nezamim tabaot v'akadesh lecha, kivan she'asan mekudeshet b'ri b'meir. Hachamim omrim ena mekudeshet ad she'yagim amon liyada. There's a woman who owns some gold, and she goes to a goldsmith, and she thinks this goldsmith is handsome, and she's interested in marrying him. So she gives him the gold and says, "Listen, would you take this gold and turn it into bracelets and earrings and rings for me? and through that, you, I will be mikudesha to you. Now, obviously, he has to agree to this, and basically, it would be really him saying, listen, will you be mikudesha to me through the work? I'm not giving you anything because it's your gold, but through my labor in turning it into a bracelet for you, instead of you paying me, you know, normally she would have to pay him a wages or a price, a contract price to do this. So he says, instead of the wages, you'll be mikudesha to me. Does that work? According to Bimi Meir, says yes. Chachamim say no. It does not work until the money gets to her hands. So what money are we talking about here? We have to clarify. My mamon, ilema oto mamon. If it's talking about the gold itself that he has to finish making the bracelet and give her the bracelet, and only then is mikudeshet. That would be the if that's the opinion of Chachamim. Then mikelad de Rabbi Meir sabad oto mamon la. So according to Rabbi Meir, even if the goldsmith still has the bracelets and didn't give it to her yet, there is kiddushin el b'ma mikadesha. How could she be mikudeshet? What money is there? Well, there's no transfer of anything. She gave him the gold and say, make a bracelet for me, and then I'll be mikudeshet to you. He made the bracelet but didn't give her anything yet. So there cannot possibly be kiddushin. Ela pishita my mamon acher. Rather, mamon in this statement means other money. So according to the Rabbi Meir, as long as he finishes the bracelet and gives her the bracelet, even though it's the same way, it's the same gold, but now there's also the deduction of wages that she doesn't have to pay. So he is mikudeshet to her through her ability to get this bracelet without wages. But according to that's Rabbi Meir. According to Chachamim, he has to add something. He has to add a few coins to the what he gives, because just giving the bracelet by itself does not effectuate anything. Okay, now that we clarified the case, let's see, well, what are their assumptions and what is their point of their controversy? Let's assume for the moment, we're going to question all of these assumptions in a minute, but in order to build our case that this machloket between Rabbi and Chachamim is about whether we say, whether we agree with Rabbase or not, that Uman Koneh B'Shevach Kli, let's follow these assumptions. The first assumption is that that wages are owed from beginning to end, meaning if I hire someone to do something, it's not that I only have to pay him at the end. It's actually, we look at, well, how much is the person getting, right? $60 an hour. So that means actually I owe him a dollar every minute. Theoretically, if I was standing there, I would have to give him a dollar every minute. Or maybe even a penny every half second. So I continuously have to owe him. Now, I'm not actually paying him every second and every minute. So therefore, it builds up as a loan. Okay, so according to this opinion, the amount that I have to pay for someone doing work for me, the wages that I have to pay someone, are a loan and that builds up from the beginning continuously until the end. And we're also going to assume that you cannot do kiddushin with a loan. If I lent a woman money, and then I say, she has to, she's supposed to pay me back. And then after a while I say, you know what? Be mikudeshet to me, and I forgive the loan. That's no good, because I'm not giving her anything. I'm just allowing her not to have to pay me, but in order to do kiddushin, you actually have to give her something. If you put those two things together, then we understand in this case why the kiddushin would not be good. It's because she gives him gold to make a bracelet out of, and he is working. As he's working on it, that becomes a loan. Every minute, the loan increases until he's done. And so now she owes him wages for turning the gold into the bracelet. And then she comes to pick it up, and he says, here it is. And you know what? You don't have to pay the wages. That's forgiving a loan. Well, you can't be mekudeshet in that way. So what's the subject of their machloket if they all agree on that? My lab uman kone b'shevach kli kame palged rimi sabad uman kone b'shevach kli v'rabanan sabri en uman kone b'shevach kli. So why does Bimir think that the kiddushin works in this case? Must be because they're arguing on this very question of uman kone b'shevach kli. Bimir thinks that the craftsman, the goldsmith, once he enhances the item and turns it from raw gold into a bracelet, he actually acquires it. So you know what? This is not like a loan because he's increasing its value. Only if he's a laborer, not increasing the loan, or a day laborer, or someone who's not enhancing the value, like a delivery man. In those cases, the wages are like a loan. But if he makes an enhancement over it, then the craftsman becomes a partner. He has ownership in it. And therefore, since he owns it, once he gives it to the woman, he's giving her something that she didn't have before. And that's valid, right? Otherwise, if you were not doing Kiddushin, her payment would be seen kind of like buying an item. So now instead of buying the item, she's getting it as a gift. Perfect. That's, you could do Kiddushin that way. Whereas Rabbanan thinks that a craftsman who puts enhancement into an item does not acquire it. And therefore, his work is just wages that gets incrementally increased as a loan. And for giving a loan, you can't do Kiddushin by forgiving a loan. And so you see that the machloket between Bimeir is Bimeir would agree with Rav Aseh, or Rav Aseh would agree with Bimeir, and Rabbanan would not. So is this not a subject of a machloket Tanaim? And we'd rather not say so, because it would be nice if everybody agreed with Rav Aseh. So we are going to give three other explanations according to which they all agree on this subject. La dekula alma en uman kone b'shevach keli. According to the first one, in fact, no one thinks that everyone's against Rav Aseh, which is not good for Rav Aseh. Rather, the question is, do we view wages as an increasing debt from beginning to end? Rabbi Meir Sabad, en l'schut ela basof, Rabbanan Sabde, yesh l'schut metechila ve'ad sof. Rabbi Meir thinks that as he's working on it, there's nothing that's owed. We don't consider that anything at all, but rather it all kicks in from in its totality at the end when she comes to pick up the item. So it's not, she doesn't owe him anything in the meantime. He just fixed it. He made it into a bracelet. When she comes to pick it up, then at that point, once she pays, then once she picks it up, then she will have to pay for it. However, before she pays for it, he gives it to her. Oh, he gives it to her. That's good. That's a nice gift, right? It's not a repayment of a debt, but rather it's a gift, and she just doesn't have to pay the wages. So that works. That's good Kiddushin. Whereas Rabbanan think that the wages are an incremental increase from beginning to the end, and so she owes him the wages as a loan, and he, by giving her the item and saying, here, you don't have to pay the wages, that's for giving a loan, and you can't do Kiddushin that way. Or another explanation, maybe everybody agrees that we look at it incrementally, and the wages are a loan. But they're arguing about whether you can do Kiddushin with a loan or not. Rabbanan thinks that you can do Kiddushin by forgiving a loan, and Rabbanan say you can't. And the third explanation, going back to the original assumptions, that everybody thinks that it's an incremental loan, and you can't do Kiddushin with a loan. And furthermore, everyone also agrees that the owner, the craftsman, does not take ownership by enhancing the value. So what is the value? What is machloket about? Rabbi Meir Sabar, milveh pruta da'ata apruta. Rabbanan Sabre, milveh pruta da'ata amilveh. We're talking about a case where the jeweler, the goldsmith here, adds something. He adds another extra pearl on it, another extra item, another jewel of his own. So he's actually giving her something as a gift that she didn't have before. So what will be the problem? The Rabbi Meir thinks that if this guy, the craftsman, is forgiving a loan and also giving some item, even a small item worth a peruta, certainly some jewel that's worth more than a peruta, her mind is on the peruta. She's not thinking so much about, oh, I'm so glad I don't have to pay the wages. That's not in her mind. She said, when he says, "Bimikudeshet to me with this here bracelet," She's looking at the bracelet and noticing there's an extra diamond on it. And so that's in her mind. Oh, I'm getting married. I'm going to give myself in Kiddushin because of that extra jewel only. And therefore, it's valid because she's not thinking about the loan. Whereas Rabbanan think that once she gets this item, her mind is not only on the jewel, but rather on the loan, right? She's like, okay, nice jewel. But really what she has in mind is, I'm so glad you did this work for me, and I don't have to pay you. I don't have to pay you back, right? So this is a loan that's being forgiven, and you can't do Kiddushin by forgiving a loan. And since her mind is primarily on the loan and not on the extra jewel, it's no good. Now this interpretation here is, we know, is the subject of two Tanaim. In the following baraita, that's also a Tosefta, the Tanya. Bizchar she'asiti imach ena mekudeshet. Bizchar she'aseh imach mekudeshet. The Tanakama of this baraita, which we're going to assume is Rabbi Meir, says that if a jeweler, a craftsman, at labor, anything that he does, let's say he's a jeweler, says, I'll be mekudeshet to me for the wages, the payment of work that I already did for you in the past. That's no good, because this is she already owes it, because he already finished the work. She already owes him the money, so this would be a milveh, and you can't be mekudeshet with a milveh. But bischashe I say imach mekudeshet. But if it's for future work that he didn't do yet, that's okay, because it's not yet a loan. And she's only going to owe. She's only going to have to pay in the future. So that we're going to. It's not a loan, but rather he's going to do the work. The value of that work, she'll be mekudeshet with that. Rabbi Natan of Bischar she'asa imach ena mekudeshet, v'kol sheken bischar she'asita imach. Rabbi Natan is more strict, and he says, even if he says work that I will do for you, be mekudeshet to me, no good, because Rabbi Natan thinks that wages are incurred continuously from beginning to end. And so even for the future one, as soon as he starts working, that first minute, that's $1 of a loan. And so even though it's happening in the future, still it gets registered as a loan and is then going to be forgiven at the end. So it's no good. And for sure, any work that was done in the past is also like a loan. So Rabbi Natan says, no good no matter what. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Omer Bemet Amru Ben Beschar Asir Shasite Imach Ben Beschar Shase Imach Adam Mekudeshet. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi agrees fundamentally with Rabbi Natan, but he adds that it doesn't matter if it's past work or future work, he can't do Kiddushin with that. However, Ve'im Osif La Nofech Mishelo Mekudeshet. But if he adds a jewel onto the item that he's making for her, then the Kiddushin is good. So, what's the difference between them? Ma'ika ben Tanakama l'Rabbi Natan, Ika benayhu sechirut. Ben Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Ika benayhu melveh peruta. So, what's the difference between Tanakama and Rabbi Natan? The difference between them is regarding wages. Do you consider it continuous? Rabbi Natan says it's continuously adding on. And that's why even for the future wages, they're continuously being increased as a loan. Whereas according to Tanakama, he does not think that. He thinks that she doesn't owe him anything until the end. So if it's work that was passed already, he already made her a bracelet yesterday, and she picked it up. So, and even if she didn't pay for it, she picked it up. Now that's a loan, because it was already done. But for future work, and he does the work, then it's not considered a loan, as long as she didn't pick it up yet. So in the future, she'll come pick up the new bracelet. He'll give it to her and say, don't pay. Yeah, that's fine, because it's not a loan until he gives it to her. And so he can give it to her without payment, and that would be a gift. So that explains the difference between the first two. Whereas the difference between Rabbi Natan and Yehuda Nasi are rather about this, milveh upruta. According to Yehuda Nasi, since he's giving her not only the gold that she gave him in the form of a bracelet, but also an extra jewel, her mind is, ooh, look at that extra jewel. Yes, I will be mekodeshet to you because you gave me that extra jewel. That's the perfect case. He's giving her something that she didn't have before. It's a total gift. Whereas, according to the Rabbi Natan, he doesn't mention the possibility of getting Kiddushin with an extra jewel. It means, according to him, even if he added an extra jewel, it wouldn't be good, because her mind says primarily that I'm being mekodeshet by the forgiving of the loan, the fact that she doesn't have to pay for his wages. And therefore, even if you add a jewel, it's no good. So we see that this is Rava's explanation of the previous Baraita, parallels the same subject as in this Baraita. We now continue with another statement about a craftsman being liable for making a mistake, for ruining something, by Shemuel. Amar Shemuel, Tabachu man shekilkel chayav l'shalem, maziku, posheahu. If I have an animal and I give it to a butcher, and I ask an expert butcher, I ask him to do shechita for me, kosher shechita, and he messes it up, he makes it a nevela, the butcher has to pay for it. Why? Because he is a damager and he's negligent. We're going to see why we need both of these statements. And therefore, it's the same as if I told him, cut over here, and then he cuts somewhere else. In order to have a kosher shechita, has to be cut on the throat in the proper place, and he goes and cuts it somewhere else and messes it up. He has to pay. We ask, lama lelememar maziku posheahu? Why the double language that he causes damage and he's negligent? Yamar maziku havamina nemiledecha deka abid besachar, havalecha deka abid bechinam lo kamashmalan posheahu. But only the first word, maziku, he causes damage. I might have thought that an expert butcher is only liable to pay when he messes up if he is paid. He's paid for his services. If someone paid for their services is more responsible than not. Like a shomer sachar, someone who's paid to watch something, is responsible at a higher level than a shomer chinam, who doesn't get paid. Shomer chinam is only responsible if he's negligent. Regarding the item. So I might have thought that without the word posheahu, that he's just maziku, if I'm paying you for your services and you mess up, you are a damager, I paid you for the service, you have to pay. But I would have thought, let's say I didn't pay you. I ask my friend who's a butcher, do me a favor and do shechita for me, and he messes it up. Maybe I would say there that he doesn't have to pay. Therefore he adds posheahu, he is negligent. And it's even someone who doesn't get paid, if they're negligent, then it's no good, and this is called negligent. Now we have a challenge against Shemuel from a Tosefta. Says Hanoten behemal tabach v'nibela uman patur hedyot hayav v'im noten sachar ben hedyot ben uman hayav. So this baraita says someone gives an animal to a butcher to do shechita, and he makes it, turns it into a nevela. He messes it up. If he's an expert, then he's not liable. If he's a lay person, he's liable. Meaning a lay person, like what was your business here in doing shechita, right? You don't know what you're doing, so you shouldn't do that. But an expert, so okay, sometimes an expert that doesn't go the way he expected, but he's a responsible person because he generally knows what he's doing. So he's not liable. But that's only if he wasn't paid. If he was paid, then the expert and the layman is always responsible because, you know, what are you doing getting involved? Why are you offering services to slaughter something when you don't know what you're doing? That's liable no matter what. An expert that's paid is liable because once you're paid, you have a higher level of responsibility. But we see here the question is an expert who's not paid does not have to pay damages. So this goes against Shemuel, because Shemuel said an expert who's not paid does have to pay damages. So Shemuel's response was, I hope that your mind gets muddled. In other words, what a bad question you asked. Either you asked it in a bad way, or it's a stupid question. Now another one of the sages comes and asks Shemuel the very same thing. And Shemuel says, may you have what the friend had. The curse that I put upon your friend that your mind should be muddled, you should get that too. Now Shemuel explains why he's frustrated with this question. So Shemuel says, I was giving you a halacha in accordance with Rabbi Meir. And you're quoting me a halacha, a tosefta here, that's according to Rabbanan. Rabbi Meir holds such experts who aren't paid to a higher standard of responsibility. I was saying kind of halacha according to him. That's therefore, I didn't bother answering your ridiculous question. Why didn't you pay attention to my words? Shani omer, maziku posheahu nasak omer lo, shechot mikan v'asechat lo mikan, mayit le hay sebarad bimeir, damar bi ba'ele limir me nafsheh. Well, he listened to my words that I said, Shmuel explains to the student. I said that he is a damager. He is negligent. It's the same as if you told the butcher, cut here, and then he goes and cuts somewhere else. And now who agrees with this? Who has this reasoning? The Bimeir, who says that a person has to take upon himself responsibility, right? Even if they're doing it for free, they are responsible. So I was following the Bimeir. Now we ask, hey, the Bimeir, where did the Bimeir ever say this? Shmuel's like quoting something from the Bimeir as if we all know what it is. Maybe it's the Mishnah earlier in the Masechet on 45b, that if an ox's owner ties it to a fence or locks it and has a gate but in front of his ox, and then it goes and nevertheless it breaks out of that tie or breaks out of that fence and goes and harms someone, whether it's Tamei, whether it's Mu'ad, he is liable. Why? Because even though he tied it up and put it the fence in front of it, nevertheless, he made holds a person, an ox owner, to an even higher standard. You are responsible no matter what, and you can't just put a regular fence, put a double fence, do whatever you can, and if it gets out, you're responsible. So you see here, the Bimeir holds a person more responsible than other people do. But that's not a good example, because there, if you go back and look at the discussion of the Talmud there, Bimeir derives this from special pesukim regarding the shod, right, that he didn't, where it says, and he didn't guard it. So I mean, he didn't guard it sufficiently, yet you're responsible to guard it, and you have to put up a high wall, a stronger fence, no matter what, you have to take care of it. But that's an exception to the rule, and that's only because of the special pesukim there. In general, the Bimeir, this is not a source that in general the Bimeir holds people on a higher standard of responsibility. So maybe it's the Mishnah that we're going to learn on the next daf. If someone you give wool to a dyer, and you ask him to make it red, instead he makes it black. You ask him to make it black, instead he makes it red. The Bimeir says the dyer is responsible to pay for the wool that he now ruined. I mean, he didn't ruin it, but it's not what the owner wanted. So you see that the Bimeir holds the dyer, the craftsman, on a high level of responsibility. So is this a source to show that in other cases also he does? And we say no, because hatam biyadayim kela omine. Here the dyer burnt it by direct action. This is gross negligence. I told you black, you made it red. This is just a black and white, simple case. You weren't paying attention. And you just did it totally wrong and messed it up. So we can't learn from here that a Bimeir would also hold people responsible in all other cases. Ela ha de Bimeir ditnan. Nishbara kado velo sileka. Naflage malo velo hamidad. Bimeir omer hayav beniskan. Chamim omer patur bedin adam. Vechayav bedin ha-shamayim. Vekay malan de benitkal. Rather, it's the following Braita that quotes Rabbi Meir, where it says, if someone, their jug broke and he left it there, or his camel fell and he didn't stand it up, and then it causes damage, someone else comes and trips on it or something. Rabbi Meir says the owner of the jug or the camel is liable. Hachamim say, oh, they are not liable in the human court, so they don't have to pay anything, even though they are liable in the heavenly court. And what we discussed this, we discovered that the subject is one who falls considered negligent, right? Meaning if I stumble and my jug falls or my animal stumbles, the Bimeir says, even though you stumbled, you didn't purposely put a stumbling block in the middle of the road, but it's because you fell while walking. Nevertheless, you are responsible for subsequent damage that happens from that. You got to go and, you know, first of all, make sure you know where you're walking and don't fall. And if you fall, clean it up right away. So you see here, the Bimeir holds people more liable, higher level of responsibility than do Chachamim. Okay, good. So now we have the source where what Shmuel was talking about, that the Bimeir holds people more responsible. Amar Baba Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tabach Uman Shekilkel Hayab. Rabbi Bar Chana says in the name of Yochanan that an expert butcher who messes something up, he is liable. And even if he's a great expert butcher like those in Sipori. Sipori, a big city up north, and these are the best the best butchers. They don't make mistakes. Nevertheless, if someone, even if someone's a great expert, but they make a mistake, they are liable. Did Rabbi Yochanan really hold an expert butcher liable? There was a case that came before Rabbi Yochanan in the Bet Knesset in the town of Ma'on. And Rabbi Yochanan said to the butcher, go bring me a proof that you're an expert, and then you won't have to pay, right? Bring me your certificate. Show me some witnesses that say you are an expert. According to this, Rabbi Yochanan, if the guy was an expert, he would not have to pay. So how could it pay that Rabbi Yochanan said, even if he's an expert like the top experts of Sipori, he would still have to pay? Lakashya, kam bechinam, kam besachar. And the answer is, depends on if he's paid or not. In that story with the butcher, where he says, you know, go bring proof that you're an expert, there, that butcher was not paid, so he has a lower level of responsibility. But if he is paid, then even if he's a great expert, he's responsible and would have to pay if he messes it up. Says, if you want the butcher to be on the hook and liable to pay if he messes up, then better to pay him. Give him a fee for his services. That's actually in the interest of the customer to pay the butcher to ensure that the butcher will be liable if he messes it up. A challenge. Here it says that I bring wheat to someone to grind for me, and the miller did not wet the grains, and therefore it came out bad. He turned it into bran or coarse bran. He's supposed to wet it before so that it will grind better. So he messed it up. Or if I give flour to a baker and he made the dough didn't rise. It was underbaked and all crumbly. He messed it up. Or if I give an animal to a butcher and the butcher made it a nevela, he didn't slaughter it properly. In all these cases, he is liable because he is like a nosoe sachar. He's like someone who gets paid. That means that even if he's not paid, it's like he gets paid. This is a challenge to what we just said, that if an expert is paid, he's liable, but if he's not paid, he's not liable. But here it says, even if he's not paid, it's as if he gets paid and is liable. So we answer, Emma mipeneshu nose sachar. Take off the kaf. It's not that he's paid, but rather he is paid, right? Because he is paid to take care of it. To watch it, if he's watching it, or he's paid to do whatever he needs to do. So in fact, this whole Braita is actually a proof for this theory that an expert is only liable if he's paid for it. But if he's not paid, then he wouldn't, right? Because it says, Mipnei shehu noseh sachar, so only if he is a noseh sachar. Hahu magrom ta, datai lekame derav, tarfe uf tare, latabach mishalome, dameh. A story about a animal that was slaughtered called magromta. It's one of the problems of shechita, that he didn't slaughter it at the neck, but rather too high, near the head, so which is an improper slaughter. So the case came to Rav, and Rav said, not kosher. And he also said that the butcher doesn't have to pay. Now this is weird, because if it's not kosher, then seemingly the butcher messed up and the butcher should have to pay. So this guy was, you know, walking home with his animal. That's no good. It's ruined and he's not getting paid. So guy's probably depressed that he lost out. And Rav Kana and Rav Asi see him on the way and talk to him. And they say to him, Rav did two things for you. Now, what did that mean? What did they mean by that? My tarte, ile mated ligri ota, tibe lel achshure kerabi yoseb rebi yoda vetarfa kerabanan. Vina me kerabanan vi baile chiyubaleta bacha. Mishare lemar haki ki hai gavna. Maybe what they meant is, Rav did two negative things to you. His rulings were doubly bad for you, because first of all, he should have said it's kosher following the opinions of Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda, who say that an animal that's slaughtered like that near the neck, they say it's kosher. So first of all, he could have relied on them and helped you out. But instead, he did one bad thing, and he followed Rabbanan and told you it's not kosher. But second bad thing is, okay, even if he follows Rabbanan, and therefore it's Nebela, he should have told you that the butcher, he should have told rule that the butcher is liable to pay because the butcher messed it up. In other words, either it's kosher and you could eat it, or it's not kosher and the butcher messed up and should have to pay for it. So if that's what these two sages, Rav Chanan and Rav Aseh, meant to tell him, is that permitted for two rabbis to talk about another rabbi who ruled in a certain way and talk against him? Hatanya lechsheyaseh lo yomar ani mazakeh v'chaberai mechayvin. Av amal seh shechaberai lebu alai. V'alzeh nemar olech rachil megaleh sod. Where the Braita discusses a bet din. When the bet din sits and decides, and some vote this way and some vote that way, right? And let's say, you know, two people said guilty, and I said, I was the judge, and I said innocent. Now, when we now the majority said guilty, so the ruling comes down, the guy's guilty. Now, when we leave the court, I should not go to the litigant, the defendant, and say, listen, I want you to know, I voted for you. I thought you were innocent. It's my colleagues, they're the ones that voted against you, but what can I do? They were the majority. I didn't agree with them. That's not proper for a judge to act that way. This is called going around as a talebearer revealing secrets. The deliberation of the judges is private, right? And when you're in deliberation, say, speak your mind, say whatever you want. But then once the majority rules, you should respect the process. And even if you disagreed with the outcome and you voted against it, you have to be, you have to support the Bet Din and speak as a whole. And so here, these two rabbis, are they really going and saying, oh, Rav really messed you up. He shouldn't have done that. It's not proper. Would not be, even though they weren't on the Bet Din, still, it's not proper for them to go and speak badly about their teacher and colleague. Ela tarte lemal yuta de la ochlach sefek isura uman naach misefek ezele. Rather, what they meant is Rav did two good things for you. Right? What's so good about it? First of all, that they didn't want you to eat something that has doubtful certainty about its kashrut. Yeah, there is one opinion, two opinions out there that say this is kosher, but the majority say it's not kosher. So number one, he saved you from eating even a possibility of something not kosher, and he also saved you from the possibility of robbery, since the butcher would only have to pay if it was not kosher. But here, there is, in fact, the possibility that it is kosher. And so if he ruled that the butcher has to pay you, it could be that you would be taking money that you don't deserve. So you see, you should be happy. And I guess they were cheering him up. He probably was all depressed now that he lost his animal and he's not getting paid. But they cheered him up, right? Rav really helped you out. Rav really did a great favor for you by keeping you from even an uncertainty of a prohibition. And hopefully he walked away feeling good that Rav helped him out so much. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen ve'amen.